Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
92.9 FM WGGT LP G-Town Radio shared this week's show, Northwest Check-In. The host, Joanna Wykander, interviews Pat Albright and Tree Muldrow from Crossroads Women's Center, discuss activism, caregiving definitions, and the new child care tax credit.
Good morning. I am so excited for our next guests. We have Pat Albright and Tree Muldrow from the Crossroads Women's Center. Good morning. So can each one of you introduce yourselves and tell us about your roles at the Crossroads Women's Center?
Yes, my name is Tree Muldrow. I'm a volunteer at Crossroads Women's Center. I've been a member for about 2 years, and I'm a retired, disabled, former caregiver, mother. I was a former special needs education teacher, a mother of three. And I've been involved with Crossroads for about 2 years.
And Pat, can you tell us about yourself and your involvement with Crossroads?
Well, I was involved with helping establish the Crossroads Women's Center in Maplewood Mall in, I think, 98 or 99. I was just trying to remember. Actually, we grew out of the Wages for Housework campaign. The Global Women's Strike is based at the Crossroads Women's Center. And I was involved with the work of the Wages for Housework campaign since the mid-70s.
So I didn't realize your roots go all the way back to the Global Women's Strike.
Global Women's Strike and the Wages for Housework campaign.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about Crossroads Women's Center and what the organization does?
Well, we're a grassroots multiracial center, and it's the base for a number of groups, the Global Women's Strike and Every Mother is a Working Mother Network. There's a Payday Men's Network that campaigns with us, and Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike. And we have the wellness program, which is the Crossroads Women's Wellness Program. And what drew me to the work was that it's always been multifaceted. I mean, it was a fusion of issues, because when we're talking about women, we hold a community together. We deal with things like some of our members had loved ones, sons or grandson beaten by the police, and we organize campaigns around that. We've been fighting campaigning for our work as mothers and other caregivers to be valued and supported in the society, including with living wages. And now we were talking about also a care income as part of the Green New Deal, as it is in Europe. And we're trying to push that forward, reshaping society towards care of people and the planet. Quick overview. And
some people don't like the idea of feminist activism or the word feminist. Are you okay with that?
Well, it depends. Actually, recently, we got a letter to the editor published in the New York Times, our first for us. And it was in response to a opinion piece that Elizabeth Brunig, I think that's how you pronounce it, did in response to somebody who was a feminist in a kind of narrow sense, who was concerned that with the child tax credits being available, then mothers might actually choose to stay home and instead of going out to wage work. And she said something like, does that mean, like, if you had a job at Arby's that you should be, prefer to go behind the counter? And so I wrote, as someone who had been at Arby's, I had been an Arby's employee years and years ago, and said, I was glad she questioned that, and then basically we were saying that every mother should be able to choose what's best for herself and her children, and that every mother is a working mother. So anyway, there have been some divides we're trying to, that we hope to cross, like other divides. So then we grew out of the welfare rights movement and have been fighting for a long time for our work to be recognized and supported. So we can choose what's best. We're workers if we're raising our children and we want to.
Yeah, it's crazy that people, especially low income people on welfare benefits, are forced to take a low paying job, taking care of other people's children, and put their children in a probably substandard old factory that probably has all kinds of defects and hazards in it, in order to get, just not even enough benefits to support their family. And then their children are, you know, cared by somebody that's not of their choosing. I mean, it's terrible. You know, people are not given a choice. I was able, I guess, and, you know, entitled enough to make that choice, to be able to choose who took care of my children and chose to work. But that's, you know, that's not saying that people that make that choice, that they have to, you know, they want to stay home. They don't have somebody dependable to take care of their children. Have to just sacrifice that in order to, you know, get what they call real work, real pay, do a real job. If taking care of our next generation is not a real job, what is? If not caring for the planet is not a real job, what is? If taking care of our disabled and elderly is not a job, what is?
I appreciate your passion, and you're right. It is real work, what we're doing, and taking care of our own families.
And you know, I'm sorry, I'm going off on this.
No, but what you're saying is really valid.
So support each other emotionally and just give ourselves the credit that we're due. Housework, motherhood is looked down upon as less than. And that's the most important thing in the world. Is taking care of your family, the next generation, the future of our humanity. That's like the most important thing that can be done. Now, we're trying to make this child tax credit total that's fully refundable, permanent, and hopefully be for not just children, but also in the future, will be all caregivers. And we want to be sure that caregivers who are mothers actually get the money. So the primary caregiver is a recipient of the money rather than the tax person that usually files the tax. That is a big problem, especially with women who are facing domestic violence or whatever, that they don't get the money. So we're going to help them access that.
That's so important. And I've heard a little bit about this upcoming child care tax credit, and I'm confused by it. So would you be able to give us a brief overview of how it's expected to work?
It is going to be, I think it's $3,600 per child per year for children under the age of 6, and $3,000 per year for children up to 17. I'm not actually sure how it's going to be, you know, I think it starts in July, as far as I've heard. And things can change because, as we know, promises are made and whatever. And it will begin in monthly payments beginning in July, but that it's going to be, you know, for the whole year. So I don't know whether there's going to be like a lump sum previous for the months previous to that and then monthly. And there's not even a mechanism. They're not even sure how it's going to be distributed, whether it's going to be through, you know, the IRS or how. Like the stimulus checks, there's no, as far as I know, there's no real venue of how they're going to do mechanism, or how they're going to do it. So that has to be determined. Pat, I don't know. You could add in on that.
Well, this thing that we really did latch onto this, the child tax credit, because it's some money that, you know, and it's moving in the direction of, I mean, we would like it to move in the direction of the, for example, that a family allowance or child benefit that most countries, you know, the industrialized countries or whatever, have something like that, except the U.S., of course. Other countries, and we have a sister center, Crossroads Women's Center in London. And in England, I mean, every mother can go to the post office and get the child allowance or whatever they call it over there. And it's very easy. And so and that's why part of why we're having this event today is because a lot of people have no idea they're eligible for any of these benefits or how they can get it. And it's tied in with filing taxes often, which a lot of us, myself included, I've been on disability and now I'm on Social Security retirement. And I haven't had to pay taxes. But in order to get the stimulus check, I had to go on the non-filer portal. And I think I had to say I had earned a dollar or something. And then I was able to get my stimulus check. So there's some other ways that, so the Campaign for Working Families is going to be there to help people figure out what they may need to do also to get stimulus checks, but also to be able to get there. We're saying that mothers should try to file their taxes as soon as possible if there's any, because they don't want it, so the money can come to them rather than to their father or partner, whoever, who might be making more money. And, you know, so they have, sometimes those are things that they're very tricky to navigate. And so the sooner that mothers and other primary caregivers can file their taxes and get, so they can get in ahead and they have a better chance. So it gets complicated and it shouldn't be like that. And so we're trying to help people navigate. And we, you know, we've all been struggling with it too.
Especially impacts the people that it's serving, poor people. Poor people might not have internet connection. They might not be aware, which is, I think, really important. I'm going to say it over again. You don't have to have wage income to receive it. You don't have to be working to receive this. You are working. It's, you know, but you don't have to have a waged income to receive this. And I think that's very important because people I've talked to just assume it's like the economic EIC.
Tax credit. Yeah.
The tax credit, the tax credit, we've all been low income tax credit that we've been used to, or you had to earn a certain amount of money in order to receive the tax credit. This is for everyone under low income, middle income with children. I think that's very important, but you need to file in order to receive it.
And I also actually wanted to just mention about the earned income tax credit that Tree brought up, that we have supported a bill that's hopefully going to be reintroduced in the U.S. Congress that is called the Worker Relief and Credit Reform Act. And this was introduced by Gwen Moore, Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee, which I was very excited about. I'm originally from Milwaukee. But anyway, but she introduced a bill that would modernize the definition of workers to include mothers and other caregivers. And also students, low-income students in higher education, so that, again, you could be eligible for the earned income tax credit if you weren't paid and didn't have an income. And so she wanted to overtly say that every mother is a working mother, mothers are workers, and she had been on welfare herself. So I think that it's great that we have the child tax credit, but we still have to work to make our work as mothers and caregivers seen as work. And so we've also been working with the Poor People's Campaign, which is about changing the narrative, and have done work, for example, to try to reinstate the general assistance, which was eliminated recently after a long fight to get it back. And I was on general assistance myself, so I feel very strongly about that being reinstated, and trying to get increase in TANF benefits for the welfare from families.
I've enjoyed learning about all the activism Crossroads Women's Center does.
And also, I just wanted to mention the caregiving survey, which we've done, that we've just begun, that is showing exactly what caregiving means. The different, sometimes we don't understand exactly what caregiving is, what the definition of caregiving. It could be taking care of your child, your elderly parent, a disabled person, a relative, someone that's incarcerated. There's so many aspects to caregiving that we don't consider and that should be supported financially.
And I love that you're putting the importance on this caregiving survey to find out what people need to mm-hmm. help focus the political activism and get this information, you know, in front of us and thinking about it and thinking about what caregiving means.
Taking care of your land. People that own community guard or run or help or volunteer in community gardens are caregivers. They're caregivers of the planet. Farmers are caregivers. I mean, you know, you can expand that exponentially.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners today? And it's so robust. I feel like we could talk forever.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of, it's kind of the tip of the iceberg.
I know.
We're doing but I think you've got a, you know, it's sort of a pretty good sense. And a lot of it is, you know, really trying to come together across divides and refuse to be pitted against each other. This narrative of the deserving and undeserving poor, or the workers or the poor, as if we're not workers. And we all are stronger, as the Poor People Campaign says, you know, as we lift from the bottom. And so people who have the least, I mean, first of all, they have the least, but that, as we've been saying, that it doesn't mean you're not doing anything. It just means that the society is focused on, it was rather focused on the corporate interests that like to take care of the consequences of you not having money rather than helping to support the work that you're already doing. And so those are some of the things that we are trying to address. And sometimes something comes up that we can move with, okay, this is something that will move us in that direction. And then sometimes something else comes up that, you know, we worked at the UN level, for example, and went to get a resolution passed that governments should measure and value and measure unwaged work in national statistics. And we were in Houston in 1977 when there was an attempt to have the to start the welfare reform. And we worked with leaders in the welfare rights movement there to get that resolution chucked out that was supporting Carter's, President Carter's plan at that time, to instead get a resolution that said mothers receiving income transfer payments or welfare should have the dignity, that money called a wage, not welfare. And leaders of the welfare rights movement, like Johnny Tillman, for example, were there, and we worked with them. And that was one of the highlights of my life. And actually the welfare rights movement was key in working with Dr. Martin Luther King to get the Poor People's Campaign started in 1968.
So, and I absolutely love what you said. We have to lift from the bottom. That's how we all rise.
We present to you WJYM LP 98.5, Uptown Entertainment and Development. In the show Talk to Reeves, the host E. Marie Lambert interviews Krista Nelson about grief and love.
Nelson is an African-American single mother of five residing in Philadelphia, PA, ancestral Lenape land. She works as a self-care guide. Krista specializes in helping people cultivate intimate relationships with nature. From Grieving to Grounding was created in response to the individual and collective grief due to COVID-19, the environmental crisis, and social racial injustice. You can contact Krista Nelson at www.justgetitdonenow.com. So welcome, Miss Krista Nelson. So tell us who you are and what you do.
I have to say, I'm so delighted to be here with you on your show, and I'm so grateful that you have devoted the month to this topic of grief and moving through grief.
Thank you.
It's so necessary. It's so helpful. And there's so many ways to work through grief.
Yes.
And so many of us who are experiencing grief.
Yeah.
So I was just thrilled when I found that this is what you were doing and devoting all of your time and your energy. My honor to be here with you because of the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
So important. Wow. Right. So, my name is Krista Nelson, as you've said, and you said so much about me. I was just sort of listening and, nodding along. I love the work that I do. My personal mission is to help as many people as possible cultivate intimate relationships with nature elements.
Awesome.
Yeah. That I think that it's this disconnect from nature that many of us feel that leads to feelings of isolation and chaos, which is exacerbated this year, 2020.
Oh my goodness,
COVID,
yes.
And everything else. Mm-hmm. And so, so now I think more of us are starting to feel the importance of being close to nature and how that may actually be the healing tie,
awesome.
for ourselves, for each other, and for the planet. So I'm just doing my part, my tiny part in that, and just sort of talking about it as often as possible and finding ways to bring nature into our lives. And in this arena of grief,
mm-hmm.
It has become clear to me through my work that the earth element in particular has wonderful healing abilities.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
So tell us, when someone comes to you and says, I recently suffered a loss, or I suffered a loss a long time ago and I can't seem to get over it. I hate to use the term get over it because I don't think you ever get over losing someone that you love. But I can't seem to get through it or move forward or even just kind of process it and accept it. What do you tell them and how do you help them?
First of all, it's a big step to even admit something like that,
right?
To say that I've experienced this loss and it's standing in the way of me showing up as the best person I can be. I have had the unfortunate experience of losing loved ones, but grief doesn't come just with loss of loved ones. It comes with a loss of any form of what we think is our identity. So right now, with people losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing a lifestyle.
Wow.
You know, the loss of pets, you know, personal items, parents, children, aunties, cousins, and then even the collective grief that we feel about the environment. And I hear of loss every day, you know, and particularly this month, it seems like every day I get a phone call of two or three people who are experiencing loss right now, you know, with a loved one.
Yes.
Not to mention this huge other, you know, tapestry of collective loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when people come to me, I talk to them about my own personal loss so that they know that they're talking to a friend, to a kindred spirit, which is a safe space to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about loss in a way of honoring what it is that and who we've lost, right?
Okay.
So it runs the gamut from people to lifestyle, to jobs, to homes, to...
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Grief, you know, grief is expansive.
Right. That's so poignant that you say that it's not just the loss of a person. It is lifestyles and homes and jobs and friendships, relationships, personal items. And I think that's so important for people to remember and to kind of process as well. You could be dealing with a loss, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the death of a person, but loss is loss, and you grieve that loss and that change.
Exactly, because you're asking yourself, well, who am I now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marie, you and I have this loss in common of losing our fathers, right?
Right.
With many other people. And so one day we are the daughter, you know, we have a father. And then another day we have our father, but in a different dimension.
Yes.
Still a daddy's girl, but in a very different way.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So we'll always miss what we've lost, but the change, the shock, the trauma is in this change in our identity. Who am I now?
Yeah.
I mean, one moment I had my sister, and now my sister's gone. Or I worked at this location, at this job. This was my career. I had this responsibility, and now I don't have that anymore. So who am I now? How do I? It's very unsettling, right? To say the least.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you, on top of that, you have the sadness, and you may have anger. You may have resentment. You may have a myriad of different emotions.
And feelings, yeah.
And feelings that now stand in the way, right, of being able to just process the loss. And as you said, like, you know, we don't like to say get over it or get a step beyond it. But it's not just living. You're the fullest expression of your life. You want to be able to be the best that you can be.
Yes, yes.
So this film that you mentioned so eloquently in your introduction, From Grieving to Grounding.
I love the title.
Yeah, thank you. That was really born out of the Zoom calls. I would be on Zoom calls with people talking about completely unrelated topics to grief. And people were crying about the fires in Australia.
Wow.
They were crying about the pandemic. They were crying about not being able to just hug their loved ones because of social distancing.
Yeah.
Crying
or visit, yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then in June, we had the murder of George Floyd.
Oh, my goodness.
And the world erupted in, you know, this brutality and this disregard for life.
Yes.
And we were all crying. So I took a look at what we could do together in small groups, one-on-one, large groups, to honor our loss, and then find a way to express what I call giving grief another place to live. Because one of the things that happens is we trap that trauma in our bodies physically. Right?
Wow.
We become ill, we become depressed. You know, we have a whole lot of ways that this trauma, this sadness, lands in our bodies.
Right. Yeah. We're eating bags of chips and several cups of coffee.
Yeah. And that's the lightweight stuff.
Right.
We self-medicate in many, many ways. And so when we come together under this umbrella of from grieving to grounding, we begin by honoring our grief. We actually name it.
Wow.
I meet with people and we speak about what it is that we've lost. And then This is the way we begin to release some of the emotion just by talking about my life with my father, right? My life with my job, my life with my aunties or my whatever the loss is. And then we start to express it, often with drawing. It could be writing, it could be drawing pictures. I put on some music and we just let the emotions take another shape and let the grief live outside of the body. This can be danced, it can be through music, it can be through, right, many different ways of expressing. And then we go into something that's really a lot of fun. There's three practices or rituals, you could call them. And the first one is, in the shamanic world, we call journeying. And it's like a shared visualization. Okay? But remember, we're going to do this focusing on the healing properties of Earth. And one of the things that we can do with Earth is we can compost what we no longer need.
Okay.
Or what's not hurting us, or what's standing in our way. So we take, we gather, even if it's virtually, in this shared visualization around a compost heap. And we hold on to the facts of what we've lost, but we turn over the hurt feelings, the anxiety, the anger, the depression, and we put that in the earth to compost. We hand that over to the soil. We take that, you know, into the virtual, visualization of the compost heap for Earth to make something much better with all of those feelings that don't serve us.
Wow.
And this is very powerful medicine. You know, it sounds a little bit like something that many of us are told not to do, like to daydream or to visualize, but it's really, it's actually going back to ancient medicine that's very powerful. Then we express again, after we've had an opportunity to release the bad feelings, we go back into our art or into our writing and see what emerges. There's usually a shift that now you can see visually, all right, in the shapes or the colors or the words that were chosen. This is a process.
Right.
Then we go into another practice of remembering, and we remember what it feels like to be held by the earth, by sand, by stones. I think you said something about playing in the dirt as a child. You'll be sort of back in time of when it felt good to just, you know, be covered in sand or to pick our rock collection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so important.
Remembering that, we think about Earth as the original ancestor. And that takes us into a conversation about ancestors and relatives who all came before us and have, you know, our grief today is very personal for us, but it's not really unique. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, everyone we've ever.
Everyone has experienced it. Yeah.
Exactly. And so knowing that, you suddenly feel less alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we begin to talk about our ancestors, our family, our relatives, people who've come before us who have suffered as we suffer now. And that helps us to feel held.
Yes. That's so important.
Yeah. And it's just now we're relieving the anxiety, the stress, the bad feelings, the hurt feelings. It doesn't change the fact that we've lost something, that we have a change in our identity. But it starts to shift our vibration, our frequency, and how we're able to get up in the morning, get out of bed, get something to eat, go to work, take care of the children, all the day-to-day things that we have to do while we're trying to process this terrible trauma.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Daniel Arista, and I'm the WCNU LP 102.5 Gata Farm Workers Radio Assistant, a Spanish-speaking radio station. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio project production, and we'll see you all next week.